Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
A few weeks ago, the former reporter and sometimes historian Rod Decker reminded us Utah used to be a swing state. For decades, politics was competitive here. You had Democratic majorities in the legislature, and the balance of power would shift back and forth until the 1970s, for reasons we've already talked about and you already know. That's when Republicans took over for good. And really, ever since then, Utah's Democrats have tried to figure out a strategy for winning, or at least trying to stay competitive and relevant. The journalist Robert Gerke says when you're this far behind, you have to mix it up. Try new things, like throwing your support in a Senate race, not behind a Democrat, but an independent.
After losing again and again and again, 17 straight Senate races in a row leading into the 2022 election, Democrats hadn't won a seat, and frankly, they hadn't been very close to winning a seat in Utah. So faced with this prospect of another failed Senate bid against Mike Lee, who was running for re-election that year, a group of prominent Democrats decided that they wanted to try something completely different.
Well, Senator Mike Lee officially has a rival for the 2022 midterm election, a former undercover CIA officer.
And instead of nominating their own candidate, Democrats threw their support behind Evan McMullen.
And because I'm running as an independent, and because I'm willing to stand up to party bosses of both sides, it will mean that Utah has the deciding vote on almost every major piece of legislation that enters the Senate.
Evan was a former Republican turned independent. He had roots at BYU, had worked in the CIA. He had run for president and done fairly well in the state.
Washington needs to be a little more concerned about what Utahns think.
He ran an aggressive campaign against Mike Lee, gave him a scare. Going into the last weeks of the election, some of the polls were showing it was a potential toss-up race. But the outcome was still the same.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for waiting so patiently. I just placed a call to Senator Lee and acknowledged that he's won re-election.
McMullen got 43% of the vote. Mike Lee got 53% of the vote. It's closer than we've seen these Senate races before, but a loss is a loss, and McMullen ended up losing that race. 2 years later, Democrats kind of went back to a more traditional model.
I don't look like a U.S. senator.
They nominated Caroline Gleit to run against John Curtis for the U.S. Senate seat that had been held by Mitt Romney.
I look like an athlete, a trailblazer.
Gleit was charismatic. She raised a lot of money. She ran a campaign focused largely on environmental issues.
I look like an advocate.
How many of you love breathing clean air?
A unifier.
They also had Brian King running for governor in that race.
We need different values and priorities, quite honestly.
And had some hopes that they could maybe make some inroads in these races.
I think that we need a governor who will stand up to terrible legislation when it crosses his desk, rather than just sign it.
And they both lost.
The governor took a comfortable victory overnight. Current numbers show Governor Cox took about 56% of the vote.
They both got about a third of the vote, which 30%. Maybe even more frustrating than that is almost exactly the same percentage of vote that candidates who barely spent any money or any time and had little name recognition got when they were running for attorney general and treasurer. And this gambit that they ran with Evan McMullen was unprecedented. We hadn't seen a party do this before. It was acknowledgement that the party has some real structural challenges and obstacles that it needs to overcome. It was pulling something out of the bag of tricks, and it didn't work. And then they went back to a more traditional approach, and that didn't work. They're exhausting their options, but they're getting the same results. There seems to be a ceiling on the Democratic support in this state. No matter how well-known the candidates are, how much they raise, how hard they campaign, there's just this wall that they can't punch through. Right now, the party finds itself at a low point, less relevant than they have been in probably the last 100 years. and they don't really have a clear path forward. So that puts Democrats in a bit of a bind. Do they become more assertive in their views and more aggressive and stand up for Democratic ideals and principles, or do they try to form a big tent and bring some independents along and some Republican moderates along? Or are they going to try to do both? And I think that's the real question that Brian King is facing as he becomes the new chair of this Democratic Party. Ultimately, to get back to relevance, they're going to have to rebuild the Democratic brand. They're going to have to make it a party that is inclusive. It's going to have outreach to the LDS voters. They're going to have outreach to the independent voters, because right now the Democratic brand is tarnished, and right now it's worth about 33% of the vote.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're trying to get a realistic sense of where Utah's Democratic Party is headed. And we're actually going to do this in two parts. I'll explain the second part a little later, but it's been nearly two generations since Democrats held any real power here. And everyone seems to agree they need to work out the right approach. Do they move to the center, find common ground with independents and moderate Republicans, or just embrace their Democratic identity and find a way to show Utahns a new vision of what that means? Let's go back to Robert Gerke for a minute. We asked him just how bad it was right now for Democrats in Utah, and he said, not good. Basically, they're on life support.
I don't think the patient's going to die on the operating table, and they have a pulse, but they're not going to get up and run a marathon anytime soon. They've had a tough 30 years of futility ever since Jan Graham won the Utah Attorney General's seat in 96. They haven't held a statewide office, and they haven't really come all that close to winning a statewide office, to be frank. So they've got a real steep hill to climb if they're going to become politically relevant in the state.
Is it any different now than it was, say, in 2000, or, I mean, pick any time? Like, they haven't had a viable statewide candidate, as you said, nearly 30 years. So how is 2025 any worse than any other time in the last 30 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the problem that they have is the headwinds of the National Party. There's sort of an aversion to some of the social cultural policies that the National Party's more upfront with than the Utah Democratic Party. You know, in the early 2000s, you had somebody like Scott Matheson Jr. who ran against John Huntsman and gave him a pretty good race. If you go back even further, I mean, back in the mid-80s, they were actually players. They had enough representation in the legislature. They could work with the governor and, and deliver him some votes to try to get some policy issues that the Republican Party didn't like across the finish line. They mattered. Now they just don't.
Ted Wilson came pretty close.
The Ted Wilson race, I think, was one that was a turning point. And it was a turning point for a few reasons. And I don't know if you want to go this far back in time, but if you look at the 20th century writ large, Utah was a bellwether state. It would vote for Democrats like Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, and it would vote for Republicans for president. It had Democratic governors, Cal Rampton and Scott Matheson, and it had Republican governors. So it was a back and forth state, a very purple state. In the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, you had this rise of the new left, as E.J. Dionne called it, you know, with more cultural, social issues coming to the forefront, things like civil rights, sexual liberation, abortion, some of these issues that didn't sit well with the Mormon majority. And you had a decline in the union power too, I think, starting at that point and continuing on. And sort of those coalesced probably in the late 70s, Equal Rights Amendment with the LDS Church coming out against that. And then the Reagan Revolution in the 80s just really kind of cemented that. And so the Ted Wilson race, I think, is sort of a watershed, because you do have this candidate who's charismatic, who's popular, who's well-known, who's leading the incumbent governor for most of the race by more than 20 points. And then at the end, his lead collapses. Norm Bangeter wins re-election. And ever since then, Democrats have had a really hard time winning anything beyond, you know, maybe a congressional seat with a Jim Matheson or a Ben McAdams. And so when he lost, it was a real setback for the Democrats, and then with the LDS Church in particular trending to the more and more to the Republican Party. And now it's generally 4 out of 5 LDS members vote Republican in pretty much every election. That's a deep hole to start the campaign in. You have people like Ben McAdams, like Jim Matheson, who are LDS, who do appeal to that demographic by sort of not turning the heat up on some of the social issues and sort of campaigning for the more populist center. It's a tightrope to walk for them.
Is the Democratic Party's struggle in Utah, is this primarily a strategic failure, just bad management, not being able to communicate the message properly, or is it a structural one that is rooted in just the systemic ideological challenge that, as you said before, most of the state is Latter-day Saint, most of the state is center-right, if not a little further on that spectrum.
Right. Yeah. Probably a little from column A, a little from column B. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to take the bad news Bears and turn them into the New York Yankees. Mm-hmm. And so you have all of these things working against them. It's hard to recruit candidates when it's unlikely that they're going to have a shot at winning. Who wants to put the time and effort into running for, you know, office? And then and so they have a hard time recruiting candidates. It's hard to get donors to give money to candidates who likely aren't going to win. There's the structural issues in place, the way the districts are drawn in this state. You know, it regularly about a third of the voters vote Democrat, but there's zero out of the four congressional districts. If a third of the voters vote Democrat, but there's only 20% in the legislature, you know, you can kind of see that there are districts drawn to disadvantaged Democrats. So that's a structural issue that's working against them. But I think they've also had a challenge, partly as a consequence of that, in formulating an ideal message, in bringing in a good bench of candidates who can actually compete and win. And you've also had a lot of turnover in the party itself. I mean, Todd Taylor was legendary. He was Mr. Democrat for years. He was the executive director of the party, had a vast trove of institutional knowledge. But when he passed away, since then they've had consistent turnover, which makes it hard for the party apparatus to do what it's supposed to be doing, helping train these candidates, staff their campaigns, and raise money for them. So it's a little bit of both, I think.
Can I try to push you to be even more outspoken about your – because you've been quite – not outrageous, but you've been critical of some of the races that you've seen and the way Democrats have handled it, maybe even blowing opportunities or, you know, like – is it in some cases just basic mismanagement sometimes?
I mean, there have been times when the party has, you know, maybe had a little bit of momentum. But then you have somebody like Jim Matheson getting a primary opponent, right? Yeah. Instead of supporting the person that they have in office, he's not liberal enough for the party structure. And so they end up with a challenger. And of course, he won the race. But, you know, that doesn't help your candidate to have to go through a primary before he goes up against a Republican in a seat that should go Republican. You know, and it's
but
also
– that speaks to – not party leadership as much as it does the devout Democrats who are voting in the state. And there's that thing that Michael Kinsley once said. He said, conservatives are always looking for converts. Liberals are always looking for heretics. And so do you think that's true of the Democratic establishment? I'm talking about not leadership, but voters are maybe too inclined to try to find a kind of purity in their candidates, and they resist someone who might be a little bit more to the center but who could – at least have a shot.
I mean, I've talked to people who are interested in being Democrats, but they're maybe pro-life and they don't feel welcome in the Democratic Party. The party's made efforts to try to reach out to LDS Democrats. They formed this whole caucus and group to kind of give them a support network within the party itself. But you still have this situation where the party is a number of small groups, you know, caucuses or whatever. And, you know, you've got to pass the purity test in some regards. And this is the exact same photographic negative of what the Republicans deal with, where the delegates in the Republican Party are so much more devout and so much more, you know, red meat.
Yeah.
And the Democrats are just the opposite. They're also very devout and set in their ways. And they want purity out of their candidates just like the Republicans do. And if you are maybe not fitting their mold, if you're maybe too centrist or maybe you don't agree with them on abortion issues, for example, you have a hard time fitting in that party and making it through the convention process. So it can be challenging, I think. And I think it's, again, a structural impediment for a centrist candidate who might aspire to run for office as a Democrat.
It gets to what approach Democrats now are going to take. Mm-hmm. And let me just sort of say what the two might be, although they're probably more than that. But take a more pragmatic, centrist, moderate approach. Collaborate because you have to. That's one approach. The other is just lean into your progressive ideals, be outspoken, be creative, be outraged,
yeah,
and play that role. You heard, for example, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker was in Utah recently, and he is calling on all Democrats, and Utah Democrats in this particular case, he says, let's be less timid.
Yeah.
You heard Nate Bluen, a Democratic senator here in Utah, said Republicans need to stop worrying about making Republicans happy so they can get some attention for their own projects. He said they should be willing to boldly criticize the Republican Party. So that's one approach. Before we get to the other approach, what do you make of that? Has that worked?
I think it depends on the landscape you're operating in. I mean, I think for Senator Bluen to be as critical as he is hurts him when it comes to passing legislation. And I think when you're working in a legislative context, there's something to be said for collaborating and getting something done. If you're working in a political campaign context, though, I think it makes sense to draw those distinctions between your party and their party. You can't just be a watered-down version of the Republican Party, or maybe they're the decaffeinated version of the Democratic Party. And I think there are issues that resonate across party lines that can be highlighted. Going back to 2018, we had three ballot initiatives that passed. One of them expanded Medicaid, one of them legalized medical marijuana, and one of them tried to do away with gerrymandering.
Yeah.
All of those things are things that Democrats have been pushing for years and never gotten anywhere in the legislature, and the public supported them. And so there is support for some of the Democratic agenda. One of the things we've seen more recently is this referendum on the anti-union bill. Labor went out and gathered over 300,000 signatures, you know, in a matter of 30 days. If you drill down on those where there is broad public support, you can start to, you know, appeal to the centrists in Utah. You're not going to win by just appealing to the Democrats or firing up the base like I think what Senator Bluen would be saying, although there is room for that too, because we also saw 20, 30,000 people turn out at the Capitol for a protest against President Trump, and 20,000 people turn out up here at the university for the Bernie Sanders AOC. So
isn't the argument that's just the base? They're going to vote for Democrats anyway.
That's the base, and there's a lot of energy in the base right now, clearly. I think that shows that. But you're not going to win by just firing up the base in Utah. Nationally, in a 50-50 election, it is all about firing up the base, which I think goes to what Governor Pritzker is saying is, you know, the base needs to be energized. But I think in this state, you need to energize the base, but you also have to make a compelling argument to the centrists and the, you know, moderate Republicans why they should vote for a Democratic candidate rather than just pushing R again like they have year in and year out.
This is a case that has been made recently, or maybe for a while now, by former state senator, and he's a leader within the Democratic Party, Scott Howell. He told the Deseret News that the party has to avoid culture wars at all costs. And he talked about framing Democratic policies in a way that he described as aligning with the values of Utah. Like, go local. I guess it raises the question of, well, what are those values? But I think what you were mentioning, those three initiatives clearly sort of align with the values of Utah, certainly what Utahns seem to be interested in. He also mentioned education, Great Salt Lake, the predicament of the Great Salt Lake are values that the party could advocate for and still be effective collaborators with the party, but not just provocateurs, I guess, is what he's saying.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, those issues, the Great Salt Lake, air quality, education, these are issues that people care about and cross party lines. And I think that they can do a better job of focusing on those. But I also think that there is room, you know, to address these cultural issues too. Do Democrats care about LGBTQ people in this state? One potential answer could be, yes, we care about them because we care about everybody, and everybody in the state needs to be safe, seen, secure, and appreciated, you know, because that makes the community better.
Yeah.
And so you don't avoid it. It's a framing question, I guess, and how they frame it. Look, the state is probably roughly a third. A third are Republicans who are never going to vote for a Democrat.
Yeah.
A third are independents or moderate-leaning Republicans who usually vote Republican. But that's the third that the Democrats have to get at least half of to get over the hump.
We've been talking with people, particularly young people, who feel like there's a real opportunity right now to change the political landscape. So here's the final question. Are they being naive?
I guess when we were young, we all thought we could change the world. It's a little bit more difficult, a little more challenging than I think that, you know, than they appreciate. But I think it's not impossible, especially with – I know Brian King has talked about this before, that especially with the Trump administration and some of the policies perhaps not sitting well with Utah voters, LDS voters in particular, and, you know, his general demeanor and, you know, character not sitting well with them, then there is an opportunity for them to be alienated. Now, Trump's not going to be on the ballot, presumably, in 2028. But, you know, there's going to be one of his successors, you know, a J.D. Vance kind of character. And so that there's an opportunity for Democrats to capitalize on that. I mean, you know, Utah's a pro-family state. Are Democrats going to capitalize on cuts to Medicaid for taking away health coverage to low-income kids? Are Utah voters comfortable with the way refugees are being treated? Are they comfortable with the way immigrant families are being treated? You know, I think there are openings there, but it's not something that's going to change next election cycle or the cycle after that. Demographics are changing, yes, but that's a long-term 15, 20, 30-year project. But I think that, you know, if you're going to eat the elephant, you do it one bite at a time, right? You start looking for opportunities outside of Salt Lake County where you can win in, say, Weber County, Grand County. You can win in Summit County. You can start looking for these opportunities where you can actually win some seats in the legislature, building that infrastructure around the state so you're not just competing in the Salt Lake County area, and start chipping away at it from there. But again, it's not an overnight project. It's a tear down and rebuild.
Robert Gerke, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Robert Gerke, he's a politics reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Utah Democrats have been asking themselves, how do you win in a place where it's been almost 30 years since you even had a shot? Do you try and work your way back to the center, maybe strip out the purity tests and build coalitions? Or do you double down on the Democratic label? Or maybe you just rethink the conventional ideas about Utah's political landscape and how Utah voters make up their minds. We're kicking off a two-part look today at the party. And of course, you got to hear from the new party chairman. Delegates picked Brian King for the job at last weekend's state convention. Now, King is a party stalwart. He's a former legislator. He ran for governor last year. And in our conversation, he led off with what might be the clearest path for Utah Democrats. That is, taking advantage of the aggressive agenda pushed by the state's conservative majority.
One of the things that you're seeing is that people are motivated to come together in a way that's effective in responding to some of the overreach from the Utah State Legislature. For example, in the last session, you had this union busting bill that passed, right? So you have a coalition of individuals and groups within Utah, just Utah, that are motivated and that mobilized to gather over 300,000 signatures in a very short time. Remarkable, remarkable. And the party was a part of that. The party was not the primary organizing influence behind it. But Democrats, along with a lot of unaffiliated voters and Republicans too, came together and said, we are going to respond. And so, you know, it tells me the spirit behind the values of the Democratic Party is strong and vibrant here in Utah. What we need is an organization, a structure that's more robust, a structure that's more effective, communication capacity that's more effective in getting out to people what it is that Utahns believe in and stand for. I think once we do that, we're going to be in a good position to have Utahns respond by saying, yeah, that resonates with me. That's what I believe in.
But what did you mean when you sat on Saturday? Here's how you put it in your speech. Who honestly is a little mad at the Democrats right now? What did you mean by that?
Well, what
I— Because you said you yourself were mad at the Democrats.
Absolutely.
What do you mean?
And what I meant is, too often, I think Democrats are not rising to the challenge that Donald Trump and other conservative voices, MAGA oftentimes, but not exclusively MAGA, oligarchs, people who are looking out in an aggressive way for the interests of very narrow segment of our society and our state in a way that damages the vast majority of Utahns, we have not effectively as Democrats stood up, either in Utah or at the national level, in declaring loudly and proudly, we won't stand for this. This is not representing Utah values. This is something that we want to have in the leader of the party to somebody who can stand up and say, listen, here's what the legislature did, Utah. Are you aware of it, number one? And number two, are you aware of the impact, the negative impact that it's going to have on just regular working Utahns? And number three, here's a proposal we have as Democrats to address that. Will you support us on that? Again.
So you would, wait, so you're saying that people should be mad at the Democrats, as you said you were, because you weren't outspoken enough?
Because we failed to address in the manner that it needed to be addressed some of the things that the legislature was doing. Now, the opposite side of that is we've been talking about this union busting bill. Democrats and other people rose up to say, listen, you can't do this, legislature, and we're going to gather those signatures that are necessary to put this on the ballot, whether in 2025 or 2026, as a referendum to have the people of the state of Utah address that. That was amazing and wonderful. We need a lot more of that. There are a lot of other issues, however, where Democrats have not been effective in standing up.
Let me ask you about something we've heard. I mean, beyond the response to what's the condition of the party from others, we've heard, you know, as I said, rock bottom. The party is irrelevant right now. But we've also heard that it's dysfunctional, and not just in its management structure, although we did hear that, as you mentioned, but that the party or some in the party are inflexible or overly dogmatic. Ben McAdams, for one, told us that one of the big problems in the party was that, and this is how he put it, we care more about purity tests than building a bigger coalition. And others have said there's this outspoken group of sort of the party establishment that imposes this kind of purity test in the process of developing candidates and even in outreach. So it's compelling to make fun of lawmakers and sort of conservative people in this state. That certainly stirs up the base, but it doesn't appeal to others. And enforcing a kind of purity test can be problematic in a place like Utah, where you have an extra challenge. So talk about that part first. Has the party imposed a purity test, do you think?
Well, the party per se has not. There are certainly individuals who are prominent within the party as activists sometimes.
Well, wait, what's the difference between the party itself and the activists? You're saying there's a difference.
Yeah, the party itself does not impose a purity test. When you look at the Constitution and the bylaws, when you look at what our policy positions are as a state Democratic Party, I don't think it's an easy thing to say that constitutes some sort of purity test about who's going to be a Democrat and who's not.
Not like on abortion rights, for example?
Right. I mean, look, if we had Archie Williams get up in the convention on Saturday and say, one of the things that you Democrats need to understand is that until you become pro-life, or until you at least have that as a significant aspect of how you pitch things, we're never going to win seats in Utah. And he was booed down, you know. People said, that's crazy. The party does not say, you can't be a Democrat and be pro-life. What the party does value is reproductive rights, treating abortion as health care, contraception. I mean, the whole area around reproductive rights honors individuals making personal choices about their families. Yeah. And that is antithetical largely, not necessarily, but for most people and how they think about this, that's antithetical to giving 104 state legislators and the governor the final say about when you can have an abortion, for example, or whether you can have access to contraception, or what you can be taught about reproductive rights in schools, public schools. So I do think that the vast majority of Democrats, myself included, are not traditionally pro-life in the sense that we support the trigger ban that the legislature put in place in 2020 and that's now being litigated through the courts. But if somebody wants to come along and say they're pro-life and they're a Democrat, more power to it.
You're a Democrat and you're a Latter-day Saint.
Yes.
So this is clearly that component, the LDS part, is important.
Yeah. I say to people, and it's absolutely true, I'm a Democrat because of the teachings of the LDS church that I was raised in and because I'm LDS right now. And I don't think that's inconsistent at all. In fact, this is a huge, significant portion of the group of people that we need as Democrats to reach out to and to persuade that the Democratic Party's values and priorities and policies more accurately reflect their values, priorities, and policies than the Republican Party does. And it's disillusioned Republicans, it's LDS church members. Of course, it's not just LDS church members, but there are a lot of LDS church members right now who I think are feeling this party that I have traditionally belonged to, or traditionally at least voted with, Republicans, and I'm conservative in my perspective and outlook.
And my dad was, and so was my grandfather.
Exactly, right. Exactly. Yeah. This party does not reflect my values anymore, not to the same degree that it used to. And I'm dissatisfied, and I'm looking around for something different, for something better that more aligns with my values. And I think that's where we as Democrats in Utah have an advantage that other Democrats in other states don't have quite to the same degree. And that is—
What do you mean?
Well, I think that Utahns are more sensitive to the idea that we care about our neighbor. We want to treat others the way we would have them treat us. That resonates here. It resonates everywhere because it's the golden rule.
Sure.
It goes far beyond
any particular
religion.
But there is a large portion of the population, if I hear you right, that has a moral compass that you're saying we could use to direct maybe a little bit toward our party than has traditionally been the case because they've gone with Republicans.
Totally. And that, again, isn't tied to any particular religion. It isn't even tied to any particular ideology. It just
but,
is.
But it is the reality,
yes,
Brian and, King, that there's a large portion of Latter-day Saint voters in this state.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And the great— I don't know what percentage of self-identified LDS voters would say that they vote routinely for Republicans or conservative causes, but it's more than 50%,
for
right?
Sure. Yes. I don't know that number either, but you're absolutely right.
And so that's being realistic.
Sure.
And so I look at that and I look at my LDS fellows, brothers and sisters, and I say, what is it that I, as a Latter-day Saint who is a Democrat and is a Democrat because of the teachings of the LDS Church, what is it that I need to communicate and how do I need to communicate to help them understand why I'm so much more comfortable as a Democrat than I would ever be as a Republican? And, you know, they can listen to what I have to say about that and say, well, I disagree with you. I'm going to stick with my conservative Republican viewpoints. Okay, fine. But I think that what the Republican Party, both nationally and at the state level, is revealing themselves as right now is making a lot of LDS individuals who have traditionally viewed themselves as Republicans or voted for Republicans uncomfortable. And that's the opportunity here in Utah in large part. It's not exclusively about that, but I do think that when we're talking about the need to look after our neighbors and to treat other people the way we would want them to treat us, those are powerful, visceral sort of emotional responses that make a difference in terms of how people receive your message, a political message. Republicans have known this, of course, for years. Hmm. And they've done a better job, quite honestly, over the last few decades than Democrats about playing those moral notes on the piano in communicating with people about why you should vote for our party rather than the other party. But what we're seeing more and more revealed is that today's Republican Party is looking out for a very narrow sliver of Utahns and Americans that doesn't consider the needs of individuals who are struggling to make ends meet. It doesn't even consider the needs of relatively comfortable individuals who are not really struggling to make ends meet, but do want a fair shake and want an even playing field.
Brian King, he's the newly elected chair of the Utah Democratic Party. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from our members. Find out how at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the prospects for the Democratic Party in Utah. It's been tough enough for the National Party right now, and here in Utah, they've been practically irrelevant for a generation. But we've spoken with party members who say Utah is primed for a Democratic revival and a political shift if they can just get their act together on the ground game and dial in the right message. We're talking with the party's new chairman, Brian King. Okay, let's get to the numbers and talk about the challenge that you face. Basically, it shakes out like this. It's a third, a third, a third. Your party has a third. It's fairly solid. Not going to vote for Republicans. They're your base. That's a third. You've got them. Then you have another third who are Republicans who are just never going to vote for Democrats. Not going to happen. You just don't have much of a chance at all of getting them, except for some strange anomaly. But then you have that other third. They call themselves independents, and mostly what they end up doing is voting Republican for the most part.
Yeah, they have in the past. Yeah.
They have in the past. But this is the group, it seems, that you have a chance at getting. These are the ones that you need if you're going to win elections or have any pragmatic success in this state. Do you agree with that, by the way, that that's the group you need to get?
Well, I think that that provides us with the greatest opportunity to move voters. You talked earlier about the purity tests, and there are many individuals who want to impose sort of a ideological purity test within the Democratic Party who would disagree and believe that the way to get the more votes and win more elections is to motivate other individuals who right now stay at home because they're discouraged by how untrue the Democratic Party is to those pure values, those base values.
You're saying they wouldn't agree with those numbers. They would say, yes, okay, it's a third, a third, a third, but the third that we have access to will actually vote for us, want us to lean in to some of these ideological things, be more outspoken. This is the group that showed up for AOC and Bernie Sanders when they came.
Right.
Be more activist.
Right.
And is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, but there is a significant number of those individuals who don't come out, work on campaigns, and show up to vote because they don't really believe that the Democratic Party is as strong and as vibrant as it needs to be in representing progressive values. And there are significant numbers of those individuals.
But are there enough to make you successful in the party?
I don't think it's either or. I think that a good Democratic Party that's successful in the future has to motivate the base and motivate progressive voters while at the same time taking positions, having policy ideas, doing campaign work, field work, reaching out to the kind of independent, moderate, pragmatic, unaffiliated voters and disillusioned Republicans.
Wait,
it's got to be both.
Oh, it's got to be both. Okay, so this is, I guess this is what you mean when you've said in the past, we need to thread the needle.
Right.
Okay. So you think there's a way to actually appeal to more moderate voters and more deeply ideological, but how do you do that?
Well, that's the challenge. You have to do it. I'm not saying I have the silver bullet here in terms of the answer, but I know
– Let me just pose it this
way. Yeah, sure.
I want to just add another wrinkle to it. You only got 52% of the vote at the convention.
Yeah.
It was close. Was it closer than you thought, by
the way?
Yes,
it was, by the way. Yeah.
So it seems to me that there's – and I don't know what the factions are that represent that number, but it seems like there's let me guess. The people who voted for you thought that you represented a pragmatic approach, appealing to a more moderate, gettable group of voters. And the other part, which seems, as you said, surprised you and may be more sizable than you thought, were like, no, let's go the other way. Let's be, you know, you've heard this from some Utah Democratic lawmakers who have said, lean in, be more aggressive. Don't be patsies for the Republican Party up on the Hill, those kinds of things. Yeah. Do you think that those are the kind of the factions that were playing out on Saturday?
That's part of it. I think more what played out on Saturday was a deep disappointment in how Democrats have performed for decades in Utah and a willingness to entertain very new and different approaches by someone who is willing to come in and say, hey, look, I'm going to do things completely differently. I'm young. The old guard has had its day and the old guard has failed. And King is part of the old guard.
Yep.
That is a little different than what you were saying in the sense that it's status quo versus something new and different that provides us with in some of the delegates' mind and in the mind of Ben Peck, who was the primary opponent that I had.
Right.
He was more of the change candidate.
Yeah.
And that's what people, I think, were looking for in large part. Many people, more people were looking for what I was providing. But many people thought that what he was providing was more attractive simply because they're frustrated at the degree to which Democrats in Utah have not had success. And look, whoever the chair is, and of course it's going to be me for 2 years,
yep.
unless I address that frustration mm-hmm. within the base and progressive activist element of this party, I'm not going to be successful, Doug. Period, full stop. While at the same time, I also don't think I'm going to be successful as the chair of the party, and the party itself won't be successful unless we're more effective in reaching out to these moderates, independents, pragmatists, and disillusioned Republicans and get their votes too. So
what you're saying is I've got to sort of mend what might – maybe it's not a rift. There's clearly a discussion going on within the party that if you go too far to the right, Brian King, you're going to alienate me. And I don't mean me, but I mean that group.
The activist base.
The activist base. You're going to alienate that group. And they may not show up. Or they
that's
may
right.
not
Or they may actively oppose you.
Right. Exactly. So that's the thread, the needle again.
There's
right?
this. And here's why I think I can do that. Nobody can – and I've challenged the most progressive elements of the Democratic Party say, tell me what it is, if anything, that I've done in the last 16 years when I served in the legislature or when I ran for governor in 2024 that I did or said a vote that I cast that you thought was not a reflection of really progressive values within the Democratic Party. Nobody's identified anything. While at the same time, when I was in the legislature, passed dozens of bills by working – and you can't pass, of course, anything in the legislature. You got to work with Republicans. I think that my history and the work that I do positions me better than anyone to thread this needle, to bridge this gap that we're talking about. Will we be successful as a party over the next 2 years? Well, we'll see. But I'm going to give the very best effort that I can to do that.
So what's the plan?
The chair of the party and the leaders of the party have to recruit good candidates in areas of the state of Utah that can win as Democrats because they are known and trusted and are proven quantities in the areas where they're running. Let me give you an example.
But why would they be willing to run if they know their chances are so just so awful right now? Because it's a lot of effort, as you well know.
Oh,
you've done this.
Yeah.
and then talking someone into doing it actually. Mm-hmm. What you realize, look, you may not win this time, but I don't know. Like, how do you talk them into it?
Well, you convey to them that this is standing up and doing something difficult. It's standing up doing something courageous. Say something about the horrible things that are happening in our state and in our country rather than just being quiet and hoping that the bad policies won't impact you or your family members directly. It's having empathy for your neighbor. That's a big part of it. You can appeal to individuals to say, look, here's what we as a state party are willing to help you with and give to you in terms of resources, education, training, staffing. So we've got to get great candidates. We can win these races if people feel that we have good quality candidates and they reflect the values and they have experiences in their individual communities. Scott Phillips is a guy who serves on the Cedar City Council, and he's
– long time with the Utah Shakespeare Festival.
Absolutely, and is loved in Iron County and in Cedar City. That's a nonpartisan race, but if he chooses to run for a county race or if he chooses to run at the local level, he's thinking about running for mayor. Everybody knows Scott's a Democrat, and they say, we don't care about that. What we care about is that we love you, Scott. Scott will win whatever race he chooses to throw his hat in my humble opinion. Mm-hmm. We need more candidates like Scott Phillips.
That's Brian King. He's the new chairman of Utah's Democratic Party. And his point about Scott Phillips, a longtime Democrat, somehow winning in a very conservative Iron County, is precisely the point made by two campaign strategists we talked to this week and who are going to be on the show next week. Jackie Morgan and Gabby Finlayson told us that Democrats need to rethink how they see Utah voters and what really moves them at the ballot box. Morgan and Finlayson are founding and senior partners at Elevate Strategies. They're both originally from Utah. And the idea they're going to flesh out for us next week goes something like this. There are enough Republicans and independents who would or could vote for a Democrat, not necessarily because of policy positions or social issues, but because they're a neighbor or a friend or just a familiar face in the community. The party, they say, has focused too much on ideological purity, and they've packaged candidates in a way that just strips out their personality. Here's just a clip from our conversation. Jackie and Gabby say the demographics of Utah are changing, and if Democrats can just build the infrastructure and get the message right, Utah could be a battleground state. No kidding. Gabby went first.
I think when it comes to LDS voters, and you know, someone who grew up LDS, I totally get this. Mormons aren't necessarily conservative. I think they are far more aligned on the libertarian ideology in a lot of ways because, you know, Mormons are very skeptical of any entity that has consolidated power. That's always kind of been the idea outside of the church, right? You don't want to be told what to do. They want to rely on, you know, a lot of services from the church as opposed to the government. And I think right now the Republican Party, both nationally and in Utah, I think they're overplaying their hand in this idea that they can be over-involved in people's lives. And, you know, the party of small government is no longer the Republican Party because they are out here dictating what people can and can't learn, what kind of flags they can fly, you know, all of these pieces that are so far outside of what I think people used to see the Republican Party as. And, you know, as we've worked all over the state over the last, you know, 3 years just with our company, we have heard so many traditionally Republican voters tell us that they don't feel like they've left the Republican Party, but that the Republican Party has left them and that they don't feel like they have an ideological home.
I think the other thing that we see a lot of in Utah is apathy, and especially with the younger generation, especially with Democrats in Utah, is this,
what's the point?
My vote doesn't count. Why should I even vote? It doesn't matter.
I'll just register as a Republican.
This apathy perpetuates the cycle. You know, we've lost everything, so we're never going to win. And if we had some more competitive elections, if we had fair maps, if we had a narrative in Utah that we had competitive elections, people might actually vote and might actually see some change because you're reducing that apathy in people who feel like their vote doesn't count. And so I don't think we've ever seen the full picture of turnout for Democrats in Utah because of that angle and giving people some hope. We often talk about hope as a strategy. Like, you know, it's really easy to be apathetic. It's really easy to be cynical. And it's really hard to be optimistic. It's really hard to have hope, especially right now. And, you know, if we can give people hope, it could change the entire narrative because we see more people who are inspired. That means more people are turning out. That means more elections are getting competitive and we're electing more Democrats and we're building more competition and breaking the monopoly. And this just continues a much bigger and better cycle than what we have now, which is just accepting defeat, letting them set the narrative, and just being on our back foot the entire time.
Yeah. How much attention are you paying to the sort of intra-party politics in the party? There was a convention, of course, state convention, and it seemed to be that there wasn't just two approaches that were presented. There, it seems like there were various, but it kind of seemed to amount to we need to appeal more to moderates, be more accepting, strip out the purity tests. And the other one was maybe not a counter to that, but get rid of the old guard, lean in, be proud of who we are. And it sounds like what I'm hearing from both of you is a little bit of all of that. I mean, Brian King ends up winning. What do you think about the approach that was being debated at that convention on Saturday?
The way that it was framed broadly is not entirely accurate. I think it's not about age. It should be about ideology. And I think we also have to do things differently if we want to win in Utah. We cannot keep doing what we've always done. And I do think it's a false choice to either stand on progressive values and to bring in more disenfranchised Republicans and independent voters. I think the more that we are internally policing, the more that we are splitting ourselves up internally, it only serves to keep more Republicans in office. And I think that you can be progressive. You can, you know, talk about the policies that we could be more likely to pass if we had more Democrats in office. But you can do that in a way that sounds authentic. And I think at the end of the day, that's what people are looking for. They're looking for authenticity, for honesty. People don't trust either party. They don't trust politicians. And we need people that sound like real people. And to us, that also means not policing people to say the exact right thing in the exact right way. Because whether it's in Utah or any other state in the country, normal people don't talk like that. That's just like not how it works. Like we talk a lot about, you know, Democratic governor of Kentucky, Andy Beshear, who says, you know, he works with people every single day that, you know, have been addicted to drugs. And everyone who is an addict does not say that they have substance use disorder. They say that they're an addict. Yeah. Why are we not talking like that? Like, it makes us sound so out of touch. And if we are actually out of touch, we need to actually have a reckoning about that, because at the end of the day, we know that Democrats are actually the people that are trying to make everyone else's lives better. And what we do need to be doing is building a coalition around class consciousness and people that have money, people that don't, and people that have power, people that don't. And that is the coalition that we have to get back to, that we had when we had working class people, labor unions, like a very different kind of coalition. The question to me is whether or not the Democratic Party and Democratic candidates are willing to meet that moment and actually take advantage of it.
That's Gabby Finlayson and Jackie Morgan from the consulting firm Elevate Strategies. They're going to join us next week on Radio West. And I should mention, they're not just consultants, they're also influencers. Check out their stuff on Instagram and TikTok at Elevate_Utah. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on YouTube at KUER90.1. We're on Instagram at Radio West. And you can email us at radiowest@kuer.org. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.